Good afternoon, Your Honors. Marty Lessner on behalf of Plaintiff and Appellee W.L. Gore & Associates. And with the Court's permission, I'd like to introduce at counsel at table Chuck Knapp from the firm of Fagerian Benson in Minnesota, who will be making the argument today. Andrew Lundgren from Young Conaway. And Kathy Testa, Corporate Counsel at W.L. Gore.
Good morning. Welcome.
Justice Berger, Justice Jacobs, Justice Ridgely. Good afternoon, and may it please the Court. My name is Bill Kelleher. I'm here for Appellant Dr. Huey Wu. I believe I've reserved 4 minutes for rebuttal. It may be helpful to begin with a brief recitation of the most relevant procedural facts. In October of 2005, I entered a limited entry of appearance pro bono on behalf of Dr. Wu. That was about a month before he was set to go to trial. That limited entry of appearance expired by its own terms on the last day of that trial, which again took place as a 3-day trial in November 2005. But a few days before that trial, the parties reached a consent judgment, which resolved the monetary damages issue. A doctor who paid $120,000 to do that, but it left open the question of any additional injunctive relief. Specifically, it said, and I'm paraphrasing, but any additional injunctive relief, if any, shall be in the form of the order attached to the consent judgment. The consent judgment had a form of order attached to it, and the form of order provided for two possible areas for additional injunctive relief. The first area was all TFE-containing polymers. I can only describe TFE-containing polymers as a subset of a larger polymer field. I don't understand exactly the scientific difference between a TFE polymer and a non-TFE-containing polymer, but for the purposes of today, I don't think it really matters, except to know that it's a subset of a larger group of general polymers. And the second area of possible additional injunctive relief was all polymers that Dr. Wu worked on at Gore, regardless whether they were TFE-containing or non-TFE-containing. What the consent judgment and attached order didn't say, however, was that Gore would be excused from proving specific trade secrets, or that the list of what Dr. Wu worked on at Gore would be secret from Dr. Wu and would effectively be excused from being proven at trial or otherwise. At trial, Gore didn't attempt to prove many specific trade secrets, and it certainly didn't attempt to prove prove a list of what Dr. Wu worked on at Gore. They didn't make an attempt to do that, and they would say they didn't have to do that. Ultimately, the trial court agreed with them on that. A few days after trial, Gore submitted a list. Actually, they submitted two lists. One was a list of non-TFE-containing polymers that Gore alleged Dr. Wu worked on at Gore, and Dr. Wu was able to see that list. He objected to a few items on that list, one of which Gore withdrew because they acknowledged that they couldn't prove that Dr. Wu had, in fact, worked on that polymer. The other list was a list that Gore alleged, a list of TFE-containing polymers that Gore alleged Dr. Wu worked on while at Gore. Dr. Wu wasn't permitted to see that list. And again, at this time, since it was after trial, he wasn't represented by counsel either. So neither he nor anybody that was working with him, because at that time it was just him, saw that list. He still has not seen that list. And under the order as it exists now from the trial court, he still can't see it, and presumably never can. On March 30th, while Dr. Wu was still...
Well, doesn't he have a remedy if he gets a new job somewhere that there's an opportunity for the vice chancellor to examine whether there's a conflict with that list?
He does have an opportunity, Your Honor. He does. If he were to get a new job, and first, I think it would be difficult given the type of injunction that it is for him to get a job at all close to this field, because there's so much uncertainty, and the employer can't see the list. Only the employer's counsel could see the list. And since Dr. Wu doesn't know what's on it, it's hard for him to even know where to look for a new job. But presumably, we can assume that he finds a job in the field, every time that he were to want to work on a certain polymer, his new employer would have to hire counsel, have that counsel review that list of polymers he worked on at Gore, and determine whether it's the new polymer that he's going to work on at his new job is on that list or not. But the real problem I have with the list is that it contains allegations that the defendant didn't know about or still doesn't know about.
What contains allegations?
The list of the TFE containing polymers the doctor who worked on at Core.
Those aren't allegations, that's just a list.
Well, it's a list that he in fact worked. It's an allegation that he worked on those polymers.
Right.
Right.
But isn't he protected? All he has to do is list and give to his own counsel the polymer, the TFE polymers that he worked on while at Gore, or the products containing those polymers. And then counsel can compare Wu's list with the Gore list. And if there's a discrepancy, there's notice of a problem, and then the parties can proceed to see if it can be resolved.
Well, he was unrepresented, so he couldn't do that. And
that's not responsive. I'm talking about when the time comes for Dr. Wu to start a new job. Before he does that, that's when that would take place.
You know, I think the time for that to have occurred has passed, because the trial court has ruled that the contents of that list represent what Dr. Wu worked on. In the trial court's final order, it references that list and makes a finding of fact that, yes, Dr. Wu worked on the items in that list, which Dr. Wu hasn't seen. I think that's the problem. Yes, if he could have seen that list, or even if it was presented at trial, I don't think he would have been fully and fairly heard on it if he couldn't see it. But even if his counsel compared a list that he gave to counsel, alleging or at least asserting what he believes he worked on, and that was compared to the list that Gore had, counsel could have tried perhaps to blindly challenge some of the ones that aren't on both lists. It would have been difficult without Dr. Wu's knowing involvement. But even that's not what happened here. The court accepted the list ex parte because Dr. Wu was unrepresented. Dr. Wu wasn't able to see it. And then the court, as early as the March 30th opinion, which Dr. Wu was still proceeding pro se, it ruled that it was going to accept the contents of the list and that those contents were going to represent, or it found those contents to represent what Dr. Wu worked on at Gore in the TFE-containing polymer area. Specifically, that opinion says that Dr. Wu still has the ability to retain an attorney for the limited purpose of evaluating the list and advising him with respect to it generally and in connection with any job opportunity that might develop in the same or related area. So as early as March 30th, the court has already decided that Gore's list of the TFE-containing polymers Dr. Wu worked on at Gore were going to represent a factual finding.
Well, let me ask a little bit about that. I assume that Gore didn't just say, here's a list, that Gore made representations or provided evidence to the court that this is an accurate list and that this does represent what Dr. Wu worked on, right?
Well, Gore submitted, I think it's pretty much just a list. There was nothing in the record supporting what's in that list. It never was an issue at trial. They never proved it by preponderance of the evidence. The other list is somewhat problematic because that was submitted after trial, but at least Dr. Wu saw that list and was able to challenge a few items. And in that regard, Gore did come back and say, okay, Dr. Wu challenged five of these, I can't remember what it was, but he challenged a few of these non-TFE-containing polymers that we allege he worked on at Gore. And in response, Gore submitted some evidence or explained why those were on the list. In the case of one of those polymers, they said, we can't demonstrate that he, in fact, worked on it. We don't have any.
Well, this problem arose only because Wu chose not to have counsel represent him at the trial at which point Wu could have put together his own list and then have counsel make the necessary comparisons, and to the extent there were discrepancies, bring them to the attention of the court.
Well, he was representing.
So isn't it the case that, you know, having made that choice, Dr. Wu now wants to profit from it?
Well, he was represented at trial, Your Honor. I represented him along with some other counsel from our firm. But the list wasn't offered at trial. If it had been, we would
have. Then it could have been offered then. It was offered after trial, but counsel, had Wu had counsel, chosen to have counsel at that time, then the same process would have taken place.
Well, his counsel could have reviewed the list. That's true.
And brought to the court's attention any discrepancy.
Between what Dr. Wu said
yes.
He worked on? Yes. But even in that case, if that's what happened, it's my belief that he would have been fully and fairly heard on the evidence, because he couldn't know what the allegations.
Well, you're saying there's only one possibility. That is, there's only one track that could be followed, and that is Dr. Wu had to know what was on the list, either directly by looking at it or by having Gore put in evidence, whether by a preponderance of other or otherwise. But doesn't that ignore the fact that by doing that, Dr. Wu would then know, would have access to other trade secrets? Dr. Wu being a person that the court by that time had deemed to be presumed not honest and someone who would not police himself and would take full advantage, even in contravention of court orders, of that information. That is, isn't your approach, your due process argument, one that would risk obliterating the trade secret rights, property rights that Gore had?
Well, Your Honor, I think that's debatable, what he could have done with a list of polymers if he...
Well, I'm just reading what the court said in his opinion, and your side hasn't argued that that's erroneous.
Well, Your Honor,
we have an adjudication that your client was dishonest with the court, violated court orders, basically did about everything contrary to what a litigant ought to do.
There's no denying that he made some very bad choices when he was proceeding pro se, especially early in the case.
So why should the court, be settling on a procedure that created a high, indeed unacceptable risk that Dr. Wu would do the same thing once he saw what was on the list?
Well, Your Honor, I think that list, the risk is, like I said, debatable, because he presumably knows what he worked on, or he should know a lot of what he worked on. But even if it does create a risk, I think his right to know what the allegations against him are trumps that risk. And I talked about that 16th century practice in my brief, where back in those days, sometimes plaintiffs wouldn't tell defendants until the first day of trial what the allegations are. Lord Coke and some of the other lawyers at the time said, no, this is unfair. We're going to make sure that the defendant knows well in advance what the allegations against the defendant are, so he can rebut and offer evidence against that.
But this is in the context of a consent judgment that's already been entered, that your client admitted to voluminous wrongdoing involving taking proprietary information that he had no right to use for his own purposes. So you're saying, well, yeah, okay, he agreed to that he did all those things, but now that we're in the phase of determining what kind of relief beyond money will attempt to protect Gore, at this point, give me some more proprietary information. Don't you see that as being kind of contradictory to what he's already admitted to?
Well, you know, I appreciate the trial court's concerns about the safety of Gore's trial secrets. Gore's trade secrets. However, again, I think it certainly opened the question whether the mere list of what he allegedly worked on would create any great danger to Gore.
Well, the court below, the Vice Chancellor, said that it would.
But even if it does...
And all we have coming from your side is conversation. I mean, there was a trial. There was a proceeding that took place and a consent judgment admitting all the wrongdoing.
But
I think when we when you make your argument, it ought to be, you know, with the realization that your client comes into this court with no equity, and therefore the right that he's arguing, if there is one, has to be of constitutional dimension, and as you say, has to be one that would trump whatever rights Gore has, even if your client has no equities.
Yes, Your Honor, and that's certainly the primary thrust of my argument. I certainly accept that there may be risks to him seeing that list. But even if there are, the due process rights that he has trumps those concerns. I mean, he has a right to know what the allegations against him are. Now, I suspect Gore will say, well, they're not allegations. I don't think they can be anything other, because their list of what they're saying he worked on at Gore, and for the trial court to just take that and incorporate it into a factual finding without the defendant even knowing what's on that list, let alone having a full and fair opportunity to...
Well, your argument is the only way that the constitutional right could be vindicated is by your client having that information, period, end of argument. No middle ground will work, including the middle ground that his lawyer, that is Dr. Wu's lawyer, could look at the list, and there could be a procedure for trying to identify and then later resolve any discrepancies. Why isn't that good enough? Why doesn't that solve the constitutional issue?
Well, mostly because we're talking about a defendant here, not a plaintiff. We're talking about allegations, not just some discovery documents. The cases that Gore cites aren't on point with the present case. Because
what is the
no case
that you, what's the case that you cite that,
well, we cite,
that requires us to hold, his right to see the list or to hear proof regarding the contents of the list, it really doesn't matter, is a constitutional dimension and trumps any property right that Gore had?
Well, Your Honor, we cite general cases that say due process requires a defendant to know the allegations against him.
Isn't the record sufficient to allow the vice chancellor to actually enter a default against your client? And if that's the case, because of his egregious misconduct, as found by the vice chancellor, if there is a default process as a sanction for what had occurred, your client would not have access to these lists either, would he?
Well, if there is a default, I suspect that all the allegations in the complaint would have just been presumed to be true for the purposes of the default. But the complaint doesn't contain allegations of TFE-containing or non-TFE-containing polymers that he worked on at Gore. I think it would still be an open. Sorry, Your Honor.
I'm just advising you that you're well into your rebuttal time if you want to save any of it.
I would, Your Honor. Thank you.
May it please the Court. Your Honors, this is a unique and extraordinary case, both factually and procedurally. And I think the seminal thought that I want to leave with you is that due process is a two-way street and that both parties are entitled to due process. With respect to the consent judgment that was reached on the eve of trial, the parties agreed to everything except one thing. And that was, Gord contended that it was entitled to a production injunction, that simply enjoining Dr. Wu not to disclose confidential information of Gore was not sufficient protection for it because Dr. Wu could not be trusted. There was a pattern of behavior in this case and a pattern of behavior before this case that supported that. So Gore's position was that it was entitled to a production injunction to keep Dr. Wu out of the industry being the research and development of TFE fluoropolymers. Dr. Wu would not agree to that, and so the parties came to an agreement. That agreement is in the consent judgment. The agreement was, if the court concluded that a production injunction was necessary in order to further protect Gore, then that injunction that would be issued would be in the form of what we've referred to as a stipulated injunction in our brief, the injunction attached to the consent judgment. The parties negotiated the content of that stipulated injunction. And it was attached to the consent judgment that the court ultimately entered. There was only two issues at that point for the Chancery Court to consider. The first issue was, is a production injunction necessary to protect Gore? And the second was, what should the temporal length of that injunction be, if indeed it was appropriate? Dr. Wu does not challenge the temporal injunction, and he has partially challenged whether Gore posited sufficient information or established that further injunction was necessary. The scope of the injunction was not at issue. The scope of the injunction was agreed to by the parties in the form of the stipulated injunction. And as such, the scope of the injunction is not, cannot be at issue on appeal.
Well, when you say the scope, do you mean the list?
What I mean is what the parties agreed to was that if the court deemed that further injunctive relief was necessary, Dr. Wu could not, for a period of time, work on any TFE polymers at all. The court ultimately said for the first 5 years of this 10-year injunction, that's in place. And then for 10 years, Dr. Wu cannot work on those fluoropolymers he worked on at Gore. Now, in his, so I'm not talking specifically about the list because the list was not in the attached stipulation.
And if I understand correctly, the whole argument by Dr. Wu is that I never got to see that list. And therefore, I never got a chance to say, well, item 16 on that list shouldn't be there.
Right. And Dr. Wu, though, has also, in his principal brief, addressed other issues, such as this is unfair because it makes me unemployable in the industry, et cetera. And it is our contention that those issues are waived. Okay. With respect to, and for that reason, I think I'll cut right to the TFE list because that seems to be the main contention. Now, Gore's burden of proof at trial was not to establish what these polymers were. Gore's burden of proof at trial was to establish that Dr. Wu misappropriated trade secrets and that further injunctive relief was necessary. Contrary to what Mr. Kelleher has represented, there was ample evidence, both presented by way of testimony and presented by way of documentary evidence, of the trade secrets, not only that Dr. Wu misappropriated when he sold this Gore technology to the Department of Army for $1 million, and when he sold this technology to at least two companies in China. But there was also discussion about the extent of other trade secrets to which Dr. Wu was exposed as a result of his position at Gore and the level of trust placed in him with him as a senior Gore scientist.
Presumably, Dr. Wu knows all of that, right?
Presumably, he does.
And so what's the protection in having the list secret if he knows it anyway?
Well, the concern that Gore has and the concern that it stated to the court with respect to this list is that this is taking all of this information that might be, presumably, is already in Dr. Wu's head, and it's putting it on two pieces of paper. And there are fluoropolymers on that list, one or two at least, that Gore believes are not known outside of Gore, the mere existence of those fluoropolymers. In addition, if a competitor of Gore received this list, that competitor would very easily be able to tell which fluoropolymers are of most importance to Gore, which are the focus of Gore's research and development, and what are the fluoropolymers that its lead research scientist was working on. It also lends authority to that list when it's coming from a document prepared by Gore and its counsel as opposed to what Dr. Wu may or may not be able to recall 5 to 10 years from now.
Let's assume for the moment that Dr. Wu had counsel at this point in time. Am I correct in understanding that, at least with respect to one of the other lists, there was some challenge to something and Gore acknowledged that, yes, we're not able to document that Dr. Wu was associated with this particular item?
That's right, Your Honor. What occurred is we had these two lists. One was non-TFE-containing polymers that Dr. Wu worked on, which aren't the absolute core technology that the TFE polymers are. Dr. Wu challenged a handful of those. We provided documentary evidence to him and the court to say, look, at, you can't say that you didn't work on these because here's an email showing that you received this polymer from the joint venture, for example. There was one that we contend Dr. Wu did, in fact, work on, but we could not find documentary evidence of it, and so we conceded the point.
Okay.
With respect to...
All right, but wait a second. So we have to start with the expectation that perhaps this second list also had one or two polymers listed on it that shouldn't have been on the list. Arguably, right?
Arguably, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, if Dr. Wu had had counsel, counsel would have been able to review that list.
Absolutely.
And Dr. Wu would have been able to prepare his own list, and counsel could compare the two and say, ah, here are two that Dr. Wu says he had nothing to do with. It's not on his list, but it is on Gore's list, so I'm going to go to court and ask Gore to offer some proof as to why those two in particular should be on the list.
That's right, Your Honor. And I'm sorry.
No, so there was a procedure available that Gore did not object to that would have allowed some exploration, if you will, of the validity of your list.
That's right. And referring to, I think we had a quote to the Brown Bag Ninth Circuit decision, to claim that this denies Dr. Wu due process is simply speculative, because had Dr. Wu retained counsel when the lists were first submitted, and Mr. Kelleher was representing him pro bono at trial, and he's representing him pro bono now, so I don't know that would be a hard hurdle for him to jump. That counsel could have looked at the list. If there was a disconnect between that list and what Dr. Wu believed to be the TFE polymers he worked on, they could have challenged it, and there would have been further relief. That was contemplated by Vice Chancellor Parsons, not only at the time that the lists were submitted, but he also referenced that there was that remedy available when he issued his March 2006 preliminary injunction, at which time he first incorporated the list officially. It's been over 1 year since those lists were submitted to the court. Mr. Kelleher has been counsel for Dr. Wu at different periods of time within that year and has never asked to see the list. The list is a function of the remedy. It's not the basis upon which the injunctive relief was awarded. And it was simply, frankly, it was additional due process that Vice Chancellor Parsons afforded Dr. Wu. The list is not secret. It was available to Dr. Wu's counsel. It was not something Gore requested or even suggested. It wasn't an element of Gore's burden of proof. It wasn't evidence relied upon by Vice Chancellor Parsons in determining that further injunctive relief was necessary. It was an effort by Vice Chancellor Parsons to clarify for the record now what Gore contends to be those TFE-containing polymers, so that if there is a dispute 5 to 10 years from now, and that's the only period of time that this list even becomes relevant, from March 2011 to March 2016, Gore is on the record as having said in 2006 or 2005 even what those polymers are and can't go beyond that list. So to your point earlier, I think there is still the avenue that Dr. Wu may have 5, 10 years down the road to challenge if there's a particular polymer that Gore contends he cannot work with, to say that he can't work with it. And so in that...
Is there a preservation order in place with regard to any evidence to support Gore's claim that Dr. Wu worked on those polymers that are on that list?
There is no order, but I can tell you that I have two notebooks in my office that contain that information.
And it's in your client's interest to maintain it.
Right. So the point is that it did not deny Dr. Wu due process. It gave him additional due process. The stipulated injunction, had it been entered as the parties agreed to, without incorporating by reference the list, would clearly have satisfied Rule 65 and due process obligations by simply saying Dr. Wu can't work with, for whatever period of time, the polymers he worked on are with at Gore. Dr. Wu agreed to that injunction. And we cited to a number of cases, Accutech, Sutaki, and some others, where courts have said that injunctions don't need to identify specifically the trade secrets because that would defeat the whole point. That would be identifying the trade secrets in public, particularly in a case with this where you have an untrustworthy defendant, gives him yet one more opportunity to damage the company. So it's to place this in perspective, it's notable that without reference to the list, there can be no question that due process would have been satisfied and that Rule 65 would have been met. The injunction, as agreed to by the parties, put Dr. Wu on notice as to what he was precluded from doing for whatever period of time agreed to by the parties. By expanding, by telling Gore, you need to say now what you believe to be those polymers, the Gore was providing further protection to Dr. Wu. With respect to if the court wants to accept Mr. Kelleher's assertion that this is evidence or that this is allegations, which we don't agree to that characterization, but even if it were, there's ample precedent for the proposition that evidence can come into a case for attorney's eyes only, particularly in trade secret cases. And I'm sure your honors are well versed in that and are very familiar with cases in which information is produced for attorney's eyes only. We've cited to a few cases, not only where that occurred, but where the court entered dispositive decisions, dismissed cases based upon evidence that was submitted for attorney's eyes only, which is a far more significant thing that has occurred in this case. And I refer to Schlafly and Brownbag in particular. In one of those cases, in Schlafly, it was a pro se defendant, a pro se plaintiff, who was denied access to the information. The court ruled, granted summary judgment for the defendant, and did not seem to be concerned that the evidence upon which it relied, at least some of it, was for attorney's eyes only. The fact that Dr. Wu chose not to retain counsel was his decision. He could have retained counsel. He chose not to. There was a process in place to protect Gore as well as Dr. Wu's interest. And as I said earlier, due process is a two-way street. Gore had concerns with respect to the disclosure of that information, and the court balanced the protections to each party by implementing this procedure where it would provide allow for the submission of the list for attorney's eyes only. In conclusion, Your Honors, due process is about fairness and equity, and it's our contention, I think the record amply supports, that Dr. Wu was afforded more than ample due process with respect to the injunctive relief in this matter. There was 2 years' worth of repeated briefing on the issue of the proper scope of injunctive relief, starting with the stipulated preliminary injunction order in March 2004, and then subsequent motions to revise and narrow the preliminary injunction that led to three different decisions thereafter. And on the issue of fairness, equity, and due process, it really is Gore, not Dr. Wu, that has been denied due process and equity and fairness, not because of the court and not because of the system, but because of Dr. Wu himself. Dr. Wu, as the record amply shows, concealed evidence. He destroyed evidence. He manufactured evidence. He committed perjury. He improperly invoked the Fifth Amendment to prevent Gore from discovering information. His attorney, his second attorney in the matter, had to withdraw for undisclosed ethical reasons. And to this day, he still has failed to comply with the consent judgment. And the court noted that when it determined that further injunctive relief was appropriate. So Gore will never know the actual scope of the harm caused it by Dr. Wu's activities because he did not cooperate in the litigation process. So for Dr. Wu to get up here and to have the temerity to suggest that Vice Chancellor Parsons denied him due process because he implemented a procedure for counsel for Dr. Wu to review information instead of Dr. Wu, I don't think is withheld or stands up to the evidence of the due process that Gore was denied as a result of his misconduct. So unless the court has further questions, I will sit down. Thank you.
Mr. Knapp mentioned that the process gave Dr. additional due process. Well, that's certainly not true, because by having that list as part of the court's order, it's been decided. It would have been better for Dr. Wu to have no list attached to the order and just have him banned from whatever polymers he worked on at Gore. That way, if it became an issue in the future, it could be litigated then, and Dr. Wu would have an opportunity to fully and fairly respond. It deprives him of due process. It doesn't give him additional due process.
But it still can be litigated in the future, can it?
As I read the court's opinion, I think it's been decided, Your Honor, on March 30th of last year in that opinion and also in the September 15th opinion. The contents of the list were made factual findings by the court when the court attached that list to its order by reference. If this court, and I suppose the trial court's decision, I believe, is unprecedented because it deprives a defendant of seeing the plaintiff's allegations. The trial court cited one case to support its decision to deny Dr. Wu's ability to review the allegations of the secret list. And that case was E.I. DuPont versus Massland. I think it's significant because the trial court misapprehended that case, the only case it cited. In its opinion, it wrote that the Massland defendant was prevented from seeing the evidence or the allegations against him. And
let me interrupt for a minute. Yes. Would you agree that the trial court could have, as a matter of equity, evaluated the nature of your client's conduct and the harm that he had caused and decide that a permanent injunction should be entered that would deprive him of doing any further work in this field?
Your Honor, no, I wouldn't agree. And I only have 30 seconds, but our brief talks about their failure to show specific trade secrets and make the connection. I think I would make the same argument here.
I'm talking hypothetically. If a scientist engages in egregious conduct of stealing proprietary information from his employer over a period of many years for profit, and is eventually caught, and a trial court of equity says, I'm finding that your conduct was so egregious that you are permanently enjoined from pursuing this line of work in the future. Now, I admit arguments could be made about whether that was overly broad, but isn't that within the realm of what a court of equity can enter by way of an injunction?
Justice Berger, I see I'm out of time. I presume I can answer.
Let me answer, yes.
Your Honor, perhaps in another case, maybe, but not in this case, because the consent judgment was a contract between the parties, and it outlined the only two areas where an injunction could possibly be ordered, and the parties agreed. And the trial court did make a ruling, Your Honor.
We will take this matter under advisement and take a brief recess.